Hi, welcome to the new Givergy podcast season, The Secret Guide to Fundraising. I'm Ben, Givergy's COO. As a team of fundraising experts, we help clients worldwide raise as much money as possible. This is thanks to our award-winning platform and our team's consultative approach, which provide the tools to raise more online and at events. My team spans five regions, each bringing the Givergy working method to charitable causes. We're excited to share our best practices, tips, and tricks through this medium, so sit back and enjoy the show. In today's episode, I'll be chatting to John Roberts, Head of UK Sales for Dotara. John has been in the fundraising industry for close to 10 years. He's a Givergy alumni and now focuses on supporting nonprofits with data mining using powerful AI tools and helping to increase donor engagement and donation. Join us on this podcast episode as we explore the power of AI, breaking down the myths and sharing advice on how you could be utilizing these tools for your nonprofit. So firstly, John, how have you been?
Very good. Thank you, Ben. It's lovely to be here. It must be refreshing for you that I'm not harassing you on Teams every 5 minutes. For those listening, I think it's fair to say I was the bane of your life at times. Would that be reasonable?
I mean, that's a very dramatic word, but I think I've probably used it. But no, I'm joking. I'm sad for you not to be constantly messaging me on Teams, asking me questions on behalf of your clients.
That's very good. Generous.
It's really good to have you there on the podcast to talk about.
Thanks so much for having me. Thanks so much.
Well, before we kick in, can you start by telling us a little bit about how your journey began in the fundraising industry?
Yeah, I certainly can. I would probably say my journey in fundraising started in a similar way to a lot of people's. I fell into it. It's something that I've heard since I've been in the industry. It's something I still hear today. I'd sort of moved down to London after uni, started working in advertising, and a good friend of mine basically came to me and said, started working for this cool new company. We provide electronic silent auctions to charities. Do you want to be a part of it? And I don't think I really understood what any of those things were. I didn't know what a silent auction was. I didn't know how you do it electronically, even if I did, but ended up learning a little bit more. It was iBid back at the time. I guess if you have long-time clients listening to this, they might recognize iBid before it became Givergy. But yeah, so that's how it started. That was 2014, joined the team at iBid as it was then. And I spent, 8 years, maybe 8.5 years with Givergy, which is, I mean, I guess testament to how much fun I had doing it. But yeah, that's kind of how I started out.
Yeah, love it. 8.5 years. It's like a life sentence, I think, for some.
it went quickly, which is a good thing, I'm sure. Went by in the blink of an eye.
Can you remember, because you've done lots of different things when you worked at Givergy, what can you remember one of your most favourite moments in fundraising?
I remember one of the very first events I supported. When I started, and it was very much iBid back then, but Givergy is all the same thing. As part of our sort of learning the ropes, we have to go and support events. And, handing the tablets out, making sure guests understand how they work, just generally supporting clients and their guests. And this event happened to be at Elton John's house, beautiful house out by Windsor. And I was kind of like, this is the most incredible situation I've ever been in. It was just packed full of the most, and I'm a huge Elton John fan, like massive. And it was all going well. And I just remember, I have a distinct memory of kind of navigating around the room between the tables and stepping on Liz Hurley's foot. And I just remember thinking to myself, have I just absolutely completely blown it? Because it hurt. You can tell. It wasn't like, oh, don't worry. I'd sort of like gone heel on end of foot. And I thought that might have been it. I genuinely thought it might have been over then and there. So that's something that sticks with me. I don't know if that's the kind of answer you were looking for. You might have been looking for some inspirational, we helped this charity raise £10 million and everyone cried. There were plenty of those moments. But when you asked me what stuck in my mind, that was the bit that literally came to mind first of all. So sorry, Liz, if you're listening.
I mean, it's one of the best stories. That's legendary. And what did Liz Hurley do when you stepped on her foot? Was she raging?
She wasn't happy. she was obviously very polite about it. But, you know, if you like accidentally sort of graze someone's foot, it's like, oh, don't worry. But I could tell that I'd sort of like, it wasn't like a toe on toe. It was the back of my foot on her foot. So I could just tell it was like she wanted to say something. But I don't even know if she remembers this. Probably doesn't, to be honest. But there you go.
Well, it sounds like you've outdone the Glastonbury experience that we saw the other day. I mean, you did you not see Elton John on Glastonbury?
Oh, yeah, I did, actually. Do you know what? I didn't watch him live, but I watched it the next morning. What an absolute rock star.
He's a legend. But, I mean, you've been in his house.
I mean, another level. I know, yeah. That was pretty special, actually. Gary Barlow did like a little... They had a piano on the front of his house. It's like a nice big gravel driveway. And Gary Barlow just did a little acoustic thing. Yeah, I think I definitely, in terms of like event caliber, that was a fantastic place to be starting. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, well, you've set the bar high. So, you know, you've moved away, unfortunately, from the Givergy family, but you're supporting nonprofits in a different way. So talk us through Dotara. How do you now support nonprofits?
Yeah. So look, it's interesting. Before we started recording, I was telling you a little about the kind of the journey where Dotara is. And it's very similar to, I guess the idea is it's very similar to where Givergy was when I first joined, sort of maybe a bit before that, 10 years ago or so. I guess Dotara spotted an opportunity to use technology to help charities improve certain processes, which were perhaps a little, for want of a better expression, stuck in the past, in exactly the same way that Givergy did. For Givergy, it was transitioning fundraisers from pen and paper silent auctions towards digital fundraising, you know, a better, more engaging, quicker, slicker way of doing things. For Dotara, it's about helping fundraisers gain a much deeper, much more reliable understanding of their donor data. The more you understand your donors, the more you understand what motivates them, the more you understand how they're likely to respond in the future, the better you can tailor your comms to them. So it's quite interesting in that both companies kind of came about from basically identifying a traditional process or way of working that could be done far more effectively through technology. So that's kind of a nice little commonality between the two organizations. In terms of Dotara and what we actually do, so we're a software platform. We use AI to help charities, as I say, better understand their donors so they can deliver more efficient, more targeted fundraising programs. We have, I guess, there are three parts to what we do. The first is called Dotara Predict. It's a CRM integration. So we plug straight in with Raiser's Edge or Donify or Salesforce or Dynamics. And what we're basically doing is providing ranks and scores, next best actions for every donor. So Ben Crook, let's say you're a donor to British Heart Foundation. What British Heart Foundation need to try and understand, the question they need to answer is, right, Ben's just given a gift. What do we do with Ben next to make sure that we have the best chance possible of seeing Ben give another gift and having as long a lifetime value with the charity as possible? It's quite a fundamental question, but it's a really difficult one for organizations to answer with the tools they've had traditionally available to them, basically Excel spreadsheets and queries. So that's the first thing. We're helping them try and understand who to talk to for which type of ask, whether it's appeals, major giving, legacy giving, and who not to, importantly. We then have something called Fundraising Intelligence, which is a reporting and analytics tool. It helps charities understand the health and the trajectory of their fundraising programs right now, so they can figure out where they should be investing money and resource going forward. A bit like, are you familiar with sort of Power BI? It's like a business intelligence tool, but designed sort of specifically for fundraisers. So that's two of the three. And the last one, which we only launched last week, is called AI Assist. It's a sort of content creation and curation tool. It uses ChatGPT, which I'm sure most of your listeners will have heard of. And it basically helps fundraisers create really compelling content in a high volume and quickly. It's not finished product stuff. It's, I need a draft to send out in my next direct mail appeal. Here's a bit of information. Now I want AI to create me a really solid first draft that I can then tweak and change and refine. So they're kind of the three products that we talk to clients about.
Lovely. Well, feels all encompassing. And I think going out doing our future fundraising tour, it's a question that's talked about so often now. And I think I mentioned to you on our call, I recently attended the AFP Icon event in New Orleans. And I went the year before in Vegas, and there was, let's just say, one or two providers that were focusing on you, on what you do. And now all of a sudden it's like it's a hot topic. And so many people are so unbelievably focused on data and CRM integrations and crunching it and who should I be ringing. So it definitely seems like the right time to be trying to try and push it out. And do you support people everywhere or just the UK?
Yeah, we support people globally. The company started out in Australia. We now operate across Asia Pacific and obviously the UK launched properly a year ago, and North America as well. So it's, I mean, the beauty of not just a product like Dataro, but any software product is that it's kind of region agnostic. Wherever you are in the world, the technology is available. So yeah, we've got clients all over the world. And you make an interesting point. You know, you said that you've been to ICON last year, not much in terms of data and AI. This year, it's everywhere.
There was a whole area to it. I could feel it.
It feels at least like there's been a bit of a light bulb moment for a lot of organizations. I think every fundraiser, certainly that I've come across over the years, understands the importance of being able to use their data to its full potential. I think the challenge has been that there haven't really been tools that are readily available to do so. CRMs have obviously been around a while, but the kind of tools that you can integrate with a CRM to solve a very specific set of problems, you know, AI being one of them, to help better understand your donors and know who to talk to. So that's what I think is particularly exciting. You know, AI has been around for a while. I think people often assume it's just turned up because it's been in the news since Christmas. Realistically, anyone that uses Siri on their iPhone, anybody that has Netflix recommendations served to them, you know, if you go onto Sainsbury's online to do your shop and it's like, here are your favorites, like all of those things, you're interacting, you're engaging with AI in a certain way, but it's traditionally been pretty much only accessible to those Apples and the Sainsbury's and Netflix and so on. So what's exciting at the moment is finally these kind of tools are available to, well, yeah, the organizations that need it most, nonprofits.
Absolutely. And before we, because we're about to dive into the questions as well, have you got any success stories that you've heard of so far from people who've used Dataro?
I mean, look, we are only as good as our results as a data industry, a data business, sorry, which ultimately is what we are. There is no hiding from the raw numbers. I'm very happy to say that almost invariably clients have very positive experiences with us. We've just supported an organization in Australia. We haven't had any case study sign off, so I won't name them, but they have an appeals program. Every year they'll send out appeal mail, direct mail to the people that they think are most likely to respond positively. And they switched to us this year. And across the year, they've raised an additional million Australian dollars. So that's your conversion from Aussie dollars to GBP is probably quicker than mine. What's that, like £600,000?
That's
significant. Parkinson's UK, they're a really good client of ours. We did a pilot appeal with them not too long ago and helped them boost income by 23%. So look, the list is pretty endless. But yeah, it's certainly for what is a technology in a new space, although the tech, as I said, itself isn't new, I would say we're at the point now where we can confidently say this stuff works. It works well, which is, I think, you know, a big box to tick.
Absolutely. Well, no, great stats. So we'll jump straight into the questions. And it's interesting because I've been recording a lot of our podcasts recently, and AI is 100% the hot topic. It's been brought up on every single podcast, and people seem to either be really excited about it. Sometimes we're meeting fundraisers and we're definitely feeling a bit of anxiety around it as well, to go, what does this mean? Could it mean a job loss? Or some people are absolutely seeing it in a different light, which is this could be a really, really exciting opportunity. So for yourself, I mean, you know, you're also speaking to people, you offer a version of AI. Do you think that people should be fearful?
No, I wouldn't say fear is the right word at all. And in my own experience, I've not come across people who I would say fear AI. What I think would be a better word is uncertainty, which I think is the word you used. But I think that's completely to be expected. Anyone in any role in any industry is naturally going to wonder how a new technology might impact them and the work that they're doing. And the same is true in the charity sector. So a huge amount of what we're doing at the moment is really just helping fundraisers understand that AI isn't here to take over the world. It's not here to take away their jobs, but it absolutely can help them do their jobs more effectively and more efficiently by automating some of the most tedious parts of their job, in the same way that CRMs allowed charities to stop sitting there and recording things manually in spreadsheets, which was how things were done before CRMs came along. You know, CRMs didn't take people's jobs. There's nothing to be afraid of, ultimately. And the same goes with AI and all new technologies. It's just helping people understand how it actually slots in with the work that they're doing. And I can only really speak for our own technology, but there's no scenario in which our tech, as an example, Dataro, could function without human input. Humans are an essential part of the process. They add an emotive element, which AI can't generate by definition. They'll add sort of the nuance, which only a fundraiser at Charity X will know. Sense checking, ultimately, they'll make the final decision. So as I say, it's all about really just automating parts of a process that are currently sucking up a huge amount of time and resource and aren't necessarily easy to deliver accurately, and replacing it with something quicker, more effective, and therefore allowing fundraisers to focus on other challenges, of which I'm sure there are no shortage, which don't have solutions that are ready-made.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And I think, we all know this as well, is that the nonprofit sector as well is the one area that is one of the most under-resourced sectors in the world. You know, I've never met really a nonprofit or a fundraising department that doesn't need more support and more help. So I think you're right. It's like, how can you just utilize that really cool tool to help you in your role rather than it seeing like, actually, it's not trying to take over. I've started to use it all the time now. I've even got to rewrite things, and it's some of the way that OpenAI does that. You're like, well, I would have never written it in that way or even thought to use those words. Are you using it yourself?
Yeah, I do. Sometimes just for, we use ChatGPT as kind of, it underpins our created tool. It isn't the only one. There's Bard, which is another similar product as well. I like to challenge it. Completely, you know, this is like sort of after work, if my boss is listening, complete waste of my time. But I'll ask it, who is, and for example, I was like, who is my dad? And I named him and I wrote, you know, where he lives. Didn't give much information at all. And my dad isn't somebody that has any kind of public profile. I'm not aware there's anything about him on the internet. And it was able to scour it and tell me who he was, how many kids he had. Interestingly, actually, it said he had two and I'm an only child. So either it knows something I don't, or it got that bit wrong. But it was incredibly good at just synthesizing information. Like, it reads everything on the internet, pulls it together, tries to rationalize it. So I use it for stuff like that. I now pretty much use it instead of Google, which a lot of people do. If I have a question and that question isn't a particularly straightforward one, ask ChatGPT and it will give you the answer, whereas Google will direct you to a load of pages. Sometimes it'll highlight something at the top, as I'm sure you're familiar with, which may or may not answer your question. Put it into ChatGPT. It will give you the answer to the question if it has it. And if it doesn't, it will say, I don't have that. So that's kind of how I use it privately. And as I said, you know, we maybe will come to it shortly, but the opportunity for fundraisers to use large language models, things like ChatGPT, is enormous. And if we talk about it, as say in a moment, I'll kind of explain where we see the challenges with ChatGPT as a standalone tool. It has a lot of potential, but you've got to do the right things to get good results, and how organizations are starting to harness things like ChatGPT to deliver the kind of results that charities want to see.
Yeah. And just in terms of your tool and how you're harnessing that power, are you saying that you're one of your tools, the third option, is actually using ChatGPT? Is it just at the moment? Is it simply around, like you're saying, the content piece? With the data?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, product one, predict helping people understand which donors they should talk to for which types of ask and when. That's one thing. The second one, analytics tool. The third one, which is the newest, that's AI Assist. It is, as the name probably suggests, it's designed to be an AI assistant, which helps copywriters or people creating campaign copy to generate volumes of drafts quickly. So yeah, short answer is it does. It uses ChatGPT. It actually uses GPT-4, which is the latest version. If you were to log on to ChatGPT, you'd get the free version. GPT-4, you have to pay to use, and it is several orders of magnitude more capable than the standard free version. So the idea is, and this is much broader, but
yeah,
the idea is you can say to ChatGPT, write me an appeal letter to my donors. We are a cancer charity. And that's what a lot of people, a lot of fundraisers have been experimenting with, that kind of thing. A lot of fundraisers have been underwhelmed by the responses they've got because they've got fairly generic, fairly non-specific copy back, which they can't really do much with. It isn't in any way tailored to what it is they're trying to achieve, their specific organizational cause. So the idea we had, what we've just launched, is it uses ChatGPT-4, so the latest, most powerful version, but we provide a framework, a set of prompts. So whatever type of communication you're trying to write, let's say you're trying to write an appeal letter or an email or a thank you letter, you choose the option you want to write, and it will have a number of fields that you have to fill in. What is the cause of the organization? What are you raising for? Tell me a bit about this particular campaign. Is there a particular ask amount you're looking for? Is there any language that you would use or wouldn't use? Basically, you fill in a load of fields, and then using that information, it's able to create really compelling first drafts. I actually did a live demonstration with a current client of ours yesterday, who I could tell was without doubt skeptical of it because they'd tried to use GPT on their own and it had generated some fairly rubbish answers. And they were kind of like, right, I get the difference. The difference is if you prompt it with the right things, if you give it the right information, it will come up with the right answers. If you don't give it the right information. So that's the nut that people need to crack. It's understanding that these tools are incredibly powerful for content creation, but it's only going to give you good output if you give it precise, nuanced information.
I get it. See, you're saying
pretty cool though.
Very, very cool. And I'm already amazed. I mean, ChatGPT only became a word that we even used in like literally months ago. And now you're already talking about ChatGPT version 4 that's doing that. So firstly, that's bloody crazy that we're already at that point. But I suppose you're right. I suppose if you actually go back to CRMs, we've always said that word, haven't we? If you put if you put crap in, you get crap out. I suppose it's the same thing. You've got to just put a bit of effort in. You can't just think it's going to completely radicalize all of your content creation on its own. You've still got to put your input. But I think you're saying if you master the art of asking it and telling it the right responses, you actually can get really cool stuff back out of it.
Yeah, I think you're completely right. Like, it has all the capabilities of being game-changing for organizations, just from a copywriting perspective. And again, just to clarify, it's not here to take over the copywriting industry or anything like that. We fully accept that there are weaknesses or limitations to the tool, as an example, which is it's never going to create a final draft. But instead of copywriters or fundraisers, a lot of organizations that we work with don't have the luxury of a copywriter. You know, it's the fundraising managers themselves who are sat there and thinking, right, we've got a Christmas campaign coming up. I need to write some compelling copy for the appeal letter or for the email campaign or whatever it might be. It basically means that instead of everybody starting with a blank page, you're getting a head start. It's creating something that is perhaps 60, 70% the way there, so that fundraisers can use their time and resource to fine tune and perfect something, as opposed to using their time and resource to literally start from scratch. So that's kind of the idea behind it.
Yeah, and that makes total sense. And, you know, just in terms of a little bit away from ChatGPT for a second. So the data mining piece, because that's how, you know, when you've explained you know, how you work and what you do, a lot of it is, it's about data, isn't it? And really utilizing it and getting as much from it. You know, have you got any advice for fundraisers on the best way to even start out there with, because I know lots of fundraisers who only use Excel, like loads and loads and loads. And then there's have CRMs, they, you know, being transparent, hate their CRMs. I have so many people say that and it's clunky, but the data piece, you can see the steam coming out of their ears sometimes when they go, I don't really know what to do, but I know I've got to do something. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I'd probably, if I was to start at the very top with a broad piece of advice, it'd be at least to consider embracing change, not specifically with Dataro or AI or even technology in general, but just exploring new ways of doing things. Charities are clearly facing unprecedented challenges at the moment, so the need to evolve is more important than ever. You know, as an example, if a charity grew its income by 7 to 8% this year versus last year, they will effectively still have slid backwards in real terms because of inflation. So the idea of just doing the same thing, the status quo, business as usual, the bottom line is it just won't cut it anymore. And at a time when costs are spiraling for charities, the demand for charitable services is increasing at the same time, people have to understand that they've got to make a positive change in order to achieve what they need to achieve. I think with regards data specifically, I think if there's one thing I could help fundraisers understand, it's that they don't need to be data experts or even have an interest in data to use their data to its full potential. The best kinds of tools, and again, this isn't just Dataro, there are more data tools out there that are excellent, that, you know, you could, more than you could shake a stick at. But the best of those tools are accessible, and they empower fundraisers to confidently answer really challenging questions, whether it's stuff that we do, like knowing who to include in the next appeal or who not to include, which acquisition channels we should be investing in for the best ROI. They allow them to answer that question or those kinds of questions without any background, without any expertise or prior knowledge in data. So that's really important, I would say. I'd also say that there's really very little value in waiting or delaying. I think one of the common pushbacks that we come across is around concerns in data quality. You said something which is a bit of an industry soundbite, which is you only get out what you put in kind of thing. It is true to a degree, but I think people can often take that phrase almost a little too literally and assume that unless what you're putting in is perfect, you're not going to get out what you need to get out. You're not going to get good stuff come from the other side. I think if there's something we've learned in our experience in working with the best part of 200 organizations of all shapes and sizes all over the world who all have their own CRMs and databases, is there is no such thing as the perfect database. There will always be hygiene issues in data sets. There will always be duplicates. There will always be gaps. There will always be inconsistencies in how stuff has been recorded. And if you as a fundraising team say to yourself, right, we know that we've got to use new and exciting tools to get the most out of our data, but we're not going to do it until we've done our big data cleanup project, you'll never start. That project will never end because, as I said, you'll never get to the point where it's perfect. And all you'll have done is realize you've lost a year when you could have been countering all the challenges that we've already discussed. And I think the last point I would make would be experiment. You're never going to get everything right all the time. But in order to progress, you know, the idea of failing forward, if you know what I mean, accepting the fact that in order to succeed, you've got to get stuff wrong along the way, I think that's fundamental. So just factor that into your planning. You've got to trial things. They're not all going to work. But if you trial enough things and if you do it in a measured way, you will find the thing that works. And it's the thing that unlocks the next stage in your charity's development, whatever that might be. It might be Dataro, it might be another tool, it could be anything. Yeah. So that would be some advice for what it's worth.
And there's some really great advice there. And like you said, it's, I suppose you could just labor on it for hours, well, weeks and days and years if you wanted to, you want everything to kind of be perfect and thinking, well, I'm, you know, we're not even ready to even consider trying some of these new ideas. It's like you're saying, I think you've got to be a bit more riskier and maybe accepting some things aren't perfect, but maybe giving it a go is really, really good advice rather than just sitting on it and thinking, oh, we're never going to get there. because I already know that some of that.
Like, this is where I think there are parallels between people. There's obviously something wonderful about charities and charitable giving and philanthropy. The reality, in my mind at least, is the most successful charities acknowledge that whilst they're doing fantastic work, they need to operate as a business. And there's almost a growing divide, it seems, in my mind, between those that acknowledge that to succeed and grow, they have to treat themselves as a business, and those that are very much, we're a charity, therefore all of our attitudes towards change and risk have to be at the absolute conservative end of the spectrum. Businesses succeed and gain a competitive advantage because they acknowledge they need to evolve. If they don't do something differently and experiment, it's all about manageable risk. I'm not saying, you know, roll the dice and stick everything on red. It's not about that at all, but you have to experiment and try new things, as I say, in order to find that avenue. So charities that accept that, in my experience at least, charities that acknowledge that risks are an inevitable fundamental part of growing their income and improving and meeting the needs of their beneficiaries, generally are the charities that now look back on the last few years and go, do you know what? It's been a pretty tough time. We had to make some bold decisions and we continue to do so, but those have paid off and we're actually in a really healthy place. Those that haven't made changes, those that haven't evolved and have kind of like shut all the windows and shut all the doors and sort of retreated almost, have found themselves in a slightly trickier position and sometimes significantly trickier.
Yeah. And it's so, so true. I think with nonprofits now as well, it's kind of because of what's happened over the last few years, it's kind of like you need to evolve. You do need to try new ideas. And we've seen loads of success stories where like nonprofits have sat down and fundraised and gone, you know what? It's a different world. Things actually are a bit different. Tech is now like, you know, even, you know, me and you can remember when we used to try and push people to go and use mobile bidding over tablet bidding. And now we laugh about it because everyone just gives using that way as an example. But that's the same for probably everything. We're kind of, everything is moving forward quite rapidly. And a lot of people on this podcast who've joined us have said, if you sit still right now, it's kind of the worst time to do it. It is a really good time. You don't need to, like you said, roll the dice and put everything on red. But it is a really, really good time to just do a bit of a sit down and go, you know what? Let's just look at what we're doing. Not that you need to change everything, because that can be quite scary, but it is a really good time, isn't it, to go, all right, well, you know, there's a lot going on right now. There's loads of new things. Maybe we should try a few ideas in our approach rather than full pelt.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. Like it's got to be incremental. If it isn't incremental, it's impossible to test. But making subtle tweaks and changes, making informed decisions and, you know, managing risk, so to speak, as you're doing so, is absolutely fine. You know, there are no challenges should be seen with that. There was a, I don't know if you've ever come across the Reimagining Fundraising initiative. Are you familiar with it?
I think so. I don't think I've heard of that.
It's basically like an initiative where a number of the world's largest global charities came together. They had I think they called it their Innovation Manifesto. And they were basically getting together to talk about how certain challenges and problems that organizations are facing could potentially be solved. And the quote that stuck with me out of that was that if we don't reinvent ourselves, we risk stagnancy, or even worse, we'll start to go into rapid decline. And I think that's the key thing. Yeah. Failing to innovate doesn't necessarily mean you stay where you are. It's not like innovate or stay where we are. The pressures that organizations are facing at the moment means that there's a risk of lacking innovation, resulting in actually going backwards and going back pretty fast. So, you know, I don't want it to sound doomy and gloomy, because it really isn't. You know, this is an incredibly exciting time. As I've said at the start, the tools that people have available now to help them achieve these goals are tenfold what was around even a couple of years ago. But people have to be willing to make those changes. People have to be brave.
Yeah. And I think the key word is to see it as an opportunity. It's just seeing it as an opportunity rather than, oh God, what does this mean? What have I got to do now? So let's just take a little bit of interest and just see, like we, you know, even by listening to this podcast, I'm sure lots of people have already sitting there thinking, well, you know what? Maybe I would like to talk to the team a little bit more about the data side. And yeah, this probably leads me on to one of the big questions that I know that people will be saying in their heads when they're listening to our podcast is, well, this sounds, you know, they think about the data side and all these tools, and also there's lots of suppliers out there now that are trying to support nonprofits. But do you think that, you know, for smaller charities, is this something that they can generally afford, or is this only a product that's really available for large nonprofits with larger budgets?
No, so very much the former. When we put this suite of products together, one of our core objectives was that it should be affordable. I've talked to you at the start of this about the fact that finally these amazing new kinds of technology are becoming accessible to the nonprofit sector. It would be disingenuous of me if what I actually meant was are becoming accessible to the wealthiest 5% of the nonprofit sector. So no, look, we have organizations of all shapes and sizes working with us. Yes, we support the likes of Greenpeace and Amnesty and Save the Children and a whole host of other global multinational brands. But the reality is the majority of our client base, very similarly with Givigy, funnily enough, is much, much smaller local regional organizations. Hospices are one of the fastest growing areas of our business at the moment. You know, inherently small, inherently localized, but invariably doing absolutely incredible work. So we kind of said, look, if we're going to launch a product for the non or set of products for the nonprofit sector, we need to be confident that people can actually afford to use these. And I'm happy to say that it is incredibly rare that price is an obstacle when working with us, which is, yeah, it's a box we were pretty adamant we wanted to tick.
Yeah, that's really, really good to hear, because I've seen lots and lots of different types of tech and software come and go within the sector. And sometimes I've heard numbers thrown around and I'm like, wow, that's only ever going to appeal to a certain type of client. So it's really good that it's accessible to all. And I suppose this does lead on to an important question is, like I said earlier, a lot of people that I speak to don't necessarily have a CRM. Do nonprofits need a CRM to be able to do, you know, to focus on data in that way?
Realistically, yes, for a couple of reasons, or at least as it stands at the moment. For machine learning, for the kind of AI that we're using for our predictive products, there is a certain volume of data that is required for those kinds of things to work well. That threshold is often an awful lot lower than people assume. You don't need to be, as I've said, a big organization. To give you a rough idea for that kind of product, for predicting who to talk to about what and when, roughly 10,000 individual donor records is what would be needed. That would always be a combination of active donors, lapsed donors. There'll be duplicates in there and everything else, but 10,000 is a rough rule. Therefore, organizations that are kind of at that stage will generally have a CRM. It's very difficult to manage. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't be able to confidently say how many supporters you could manage comfortably without a CRM, but I would certainly say that any organization, basically any charity that starts out, I've never met a charity, however big or small, that doesn't have ambitions to grow. That seems to be something that they all have in common, which is amazing. They're run by inspirational people who want to do as much good as they can and as quickly as they can. Inevitably, there will come a point in that charity's journey where trying to manage donor data on spreadsheets becomes impossible, and it starts to become detrimental to the charity reaching its goals. So, yeah, for what we do, generally speaking, CRMs are pretty important. For AI Assist, the copywriting tool, you don't actually need a CRM. You just need to be able to sit there and type in the prompts as needed. So basically, what you need is a computer and a keyboard. But yeah, I would strongly recommend any organization that is looking to grow to consider the benefits of a CRM.
No, good advice. And I'm going to go to my final question because I'm conscious that we're nearly, unfortunately, out of time. So for fundraisers out there, especially newer ones, what advice would you give to them starting out, especially around managing donor databases and communication? You've already given so much great advice, but for brand new fundraisers who might be entering our sector, what advice would you give?
I'll probably be repeating myself. It links back to a lot of what I said, but look, there are lots of pieces of advice that lots of people in lots of different sectors could probably give. But from the seat I sit in, which is around data, at the very least, I would say that people should understand the value that that will offer them, maybe not today or tomorrow, but down the line. Being able to look back on a broad and deep set of data as your organization grows, I would say is absolutely fundamental as a charity starting out. Even if today, you feel you can do it on spreadsheets. Keep in mind that in 3 years' time, you might significantly regret that. The second thing, and this is just, I guess, for fundraisers, is let's say you're somebody who finds themselves moving into the nonprofit sector, having not been in a sector like that before. Do everything you can to upskill yourself in the tools available, of which there are lots and lots and lots. You can kind of take one of two routes. You can say, no, I don't want to learn these new things. Or you can say, no, I'm going to embrace these tools and I'm going to do everything I possibly can to make the use of what's available. There was an interesting quote I heard at a conference the other day, just linking back to the role of AI and the perceptions of it. And it was, AI is never going to steal anyone's job, but the people who know how to use AI may well. And I think that's quite an important way of looking at it. AI, like every other technology, is a tool which will enable you to do your job more effectively. If you shun that kind of thing, whether it's AI or anything else, you have to do so in the knowledge that you're probably going to be putting yourself at a competitive disadvantage when it comes to furthering the goals of the charity or even your own personal goals. So that's probably what I'd say.
Well, great thoughts. And I've never thought about it that way as well. I think it's something that we should all definitely consider. But thank you so much, John, for joining us today. It's been truly insightful getting to learn more about Dataro and your thoughts on the future of data. So thank you so much, John.
It'd be my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, we hope that you've enjoyed today's episode and found the content informative. If you want to hear more from Dataro, head over to dataro.io. And I'm going to spell it to make sure you've got it, which is dataro.io to find out more. We'd love to hear your thoughts, so feel free to email podcast@giveagy.com. You can also make suggestions on future topics or guests you would love to hear on our show. Thank you again, and don't forget to hit subscribe or follow to listen and look out for new and next episodes. Thank you.